Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. Over the last couple of months, media coverage of the conflict in Ukraine has been dominated by the hopes and the fears of Kyiv's counteroffensive, which is meant to deliver, if not lethal, then humiliating enough blow to Russia and force it to retreat. While this possibility is usually dismissed in Moscow, doesn't it also offer an opportune off-ramp for all sides to cut their losses and trade a good war for a bad peace? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Vasily Kushin, director of the Center for Comprehensive European and International Studies at the Higher School of Economics in Moscow. Mr. Kushin, it's a great honor, a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you wrote before that what's going on in Ukraine right now is not just a conflict between Russia and the West on the territory of Ukraine or over the territory of Ukraine, but it's a conflict in which Ukraine itself has been turned into a weapon by Washington, the entire nation weaponized for geopolitical purposes. Isn't it also true for Russia? Didn't it have to objectify its neighbor in order to defend its own security?
Basically, what Russia has been doing until relatively recent time, Russia was trying to influence the Ukrainian politics in a way which would prevent this development. Russia tried to use, historically, Russia mostly tried to use economic tools in a relatively primitive way to create economic incentives for the Ukrainian elite to work with Russia. And the goal was never undermining the Ukrainian statehood. Russia have never even dreamt about taking Crimea before 2014, and there are proofs for that. For example, throughout 2000s, Russia has been building a huge naval base near Novorossiysk, spending billions of dollars on that. And that naval base was supposed to house the Black Sea Fleet after its after it would be withdrawn from Crimea in 2017. Okay. Ironically, this base was finished exactly in 2014.
But, Mr. Kushin, I'm sure the opponents of this thesis would tell you that an operation of the scale of Crimea is impossible to pull on a whim. You cannot just wake up and decide that you're going to do it. It requires certain preparation.
There was, of course, contingency planning. The possibility of destabilization of Ukraine was always taken into account. Ukraine has experienced first coup in 2004, and that was the first like violent turn in Ukrainian history, which was followed by a period of economic and political instability. Again, one should remember that the best period in history of the post-Soviet Ukraine was period between 1999 and 2003. Economic GDP growth in 2003 was above 11%. Ukraine was growing this year with the same speed as China. In 2004, immediately after the Orange Revolution, economic development has abruptly stopped. As a result, Ukraine has never been able to reach per capita GDP level of 1992.
You wrote something that touched me deeply. You said that the most costly mistake of the Russian leadership and of the Russian analytical community was the failure to understand the shift in social attitudes in Ukraine, attitudes first and foremost towards Russia. Why do you think Moscow followed this old rationale of, you know, let's develop mutually beneficial economic ties for so long, why was it blind to this growing hatred?
Yeah, basically, Russian leadership, Russian state failed to set up an adequate system of monitoring and researching the former Soviet states after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Even now, Russia has more researchers studying Latin America and sub-Saharan Africa than post-Soviet states. So Russian understanding of the political processes in these countries was never deep. They could get a lot of pieces of information, a lot of maybe some intelligence data, but there was no one who could really process this and put this together. So they could use the economic tools, but completely misunderstood the situation in society and the situation in the Ukrainian political elites. They were just dealing with certain figures which they considered to be like good partners, tried to create economic incentives for the Ukrainian state in general. Usually in 1990s and 2000s, this was through cheap natural gas and providing privileged access to certain parts of the Russian internal market. And basically, only after it became apparent that this whole policy was a complete failure, they started very slowly to change their approach. Mm-hmm. And
can I stop you here and ask? I think what you're talking about is one of the reasons why the Russian operation in Ukraine came as such a huge shock, first and foremost to the Russians, but surely the decision makers, again, in the Kremlin or in Kyiv and Washington, had to prepare for something like this. You cannot launch a military operation, or let's use, you know, the vernacular of the people, the war, on a whim. You cannot do it overnight. When do you think this decision about the inevitability of the conflict was reached in Moscow, in Kyiv, and in Washington?
Well, we have a direct statement from Ukrainian side, from the from Mr. Podolyak, who said that they came to conclusion that war would be inevitable in the end of 2019, when Normandy format summit, which happened, I believe, in Paris, has ended in failure. Preparations were conducted even before that, and if you look at the statements by some Ukrainian political figures, like former counselor to the presidential administration of President Zelensky, Mr. Arestovich, he, I believe, gave interview about the inevitability of war in 2019 as well. So that was probably already a point of no return when they decided that for themselves.
Do you think that decision was independent, or was it imposed on them?
I believe it was discussed with the West and agreed upon. I believe at this point they understood that there would be war, and at that time they probably were actively preparing their own operation of taking back Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics and probably launching offensive to Crimea. The Russians, I believe, understood that war would be inevitable a bit later. So there was growing concern about the possibility of war, but I believe the point of no return was for Russia was passed in early 21. Mm-hmm. And in April 2021, we could see massive exercises.
Even after those exercises you mentioned, and I think we can also see from the orders to Russian industry that, you know, they started manufacturing certain military hardware and equipment, that it was coming, but still Putin and Biden had their final meeting, one-on-one meeting in summer of 2021, supposedly trying to reach some last-minute compromise. Do you think it was mostly a PR move, or Russia genuinely believed that some sort of compromise with the West, with the Ukrainians, was possible?
There were hopes, certainly, that some sort of compromise would be possible, but the hopes were not too high, because Russia and the United States have a history of summits and negotiations which continued for some times, looked promising, but led to nowhere. What I heard from the Russian officials about the summit itself was quite good and raised certain hopes, and there were agreements to work on the differences of the two countries. But what followed next was completely different. So what was said by President Biden during the summit had nothing to do with the actual activities of the American government agencies afterwards. It's not clear, was it intended this way, or was it some kind of sabotage by the officials? We know that President Biden, it's like some similarity with President Yeltsin of late 90s. He can work only limited amount of time every day, and I believe he spent like 40% of his presidency on vacation. Mm-hmm. So probably there's limited amount of issues he can track.
The short memory span. That
yeah, he can directly control, and that means that huge number of decisions are being taken without his direct participation. Probably that's the explanation. So, probably the attempt was genuine. Probably one explanation could be that there is lack of unity in U.S. administration. Some people wanted to achieve that compromise. Some people wanted some swift victory. So that's the result we have.
Okay, Mr. Kashin, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Vasily Kashin, Director of the Center for Comprehensive European and International Studies at the Higher School of Economics in Moscow. Mr. Kashin, before the break, we were talking about the fact that the preparations for this conflict were in the works for several years prior to Russia's declaring the beginning of its military operation. And you wrote that it was visible in the way Ukraine was being supplied with weapons. And one very interesting point you mentioned is that it primarily received communications and surveillance equipment, that equipment that, you know, the technology of which was somewhat obsolete and outdated, but the West did not supply Ukraine with heavy armaments, with tanks, that kind of thing. Can anything be derived from that fact? Can we judge about the rationale of the West, how they saw the conflict, this conflict prior to its development?
Okay, so basically Ukraine has inherited from the Soviet era an absolutely huge stockpiles of various weapons, including some of the very costly ones. Ukraine did export a lot of that weapons, but even the inventory which remained was absolutely huge. We could see that during this war. Ukraine was fighting a high-intensity war for more than a year, using the old Soviet stockpile of, for example, surface-to-air missiles.
So just to emphasize that point, you believe that these continuing clashes from 2014 in Donbas were a sort of prelude for all sides to see what the next conflict is going to be like?
No, they couldn't see that. Everyone failed to predict the exact scale. So there was, I believe that the West expected Ukraine to be able to fight using the existing stockpile of heavy weapons, which would be improved, modernized, plus the new Western supplies of communication, surveillance, reconnaissance equipment, plus supply of some modern light weapons, and that would be enough to sustain Ukraine for the war, because the Western
for the war against Russia.
Because the Western expectation was that Russia would be destabilized by extreme sanctions and the military losses. And if you look at the Western statements during the first months of war, you constantly see these statements mm-hmm. that everything will be decided in the next 10 mm-hmm. days, everything will be decided in the next couple of weeks. Basically, there was an expectation that Russia wouldn't be able to continue the war for like longer than for a period of time, longer than probably a couple mm-hmm. of months, maybe.
Well, at least it won't be able to sustain the war effort as long as Ukraine.
Yes. So, and Ukraine would be, Russia would just stop the operation. Ukraine would emerge victorious. And the goal of Russian strategic defeat would be achieved by the West this way.
Well, what an optimistic scenario. And this is not the first time that the Americans played it out, because the American rationale at war has been played out several times in Afghanistan, in Iraq, to some extent in Syria. They declare a major operation, the ability to intervene anywhere at any time, which followed by an overreach, exhaustion, loss of interest, mm-hmm. and then, you know, a less than honorable mm-hmm. deceit, retreat. Do you think the same will happen in Ukraine?
I believe it will happen inevitably. It doesn't mean that Russia will be able to achieve all of its initial goals, but the key goal of the United States was inflicting a strategic defeat on Russia. And that was supposed to be achieved by internal destabilization of Russia. So basically the most important front in this war was not in Ukraine, but inside of Russia. It was the state of the Russian economy and the state of the Russian society. And this is what the Russian government was focused on for the first several months of war, how to survive during the sanctions. And that Russia managed to do remarkably well. So in 2022, there was very limited GDP decline, like about 3%. Industrial production was basically stable. Budget situation was basically stable, very limited budget deficit. So it was just shown that Russia would be able to sustain this war economically for years.
Many Russian analysts believe that the war of attrition is still in the U.S.'s best interest, allowing Russia and Ukraine to bleed and weaken while the United States supposedly stays above the clash and benefits from it all. Given what you just mentioned, the U.S. budgetary pressures, election rivalry, do you think the current administration is still benefiting politically from overtly supporting Ukraine and maintaining this open confrontation with Russia?
I don't believe they are benefiting from this, and they're also looking for ways out of this situation. They also need off-ramp. What happened is not a U.S. political success, although they are claiming otherwise. Yes, it did lead to strengthening of U.S. influence in Europe, but U.S. influence on European affairs has been growing anyway for a long time. However, United States are facing a major arms race and major rivalry with China, and China is gonna be much stronger opponent, even in purely military field, than Soviet Union could ever hope to be. The reason is simple. If you compare manufacturing value added in China, it's like it's more than United States and Japan combined, even if you don't take purchasing parity into account. And as we could see from this war, during this real full-scale wars, manufacturing capacity is still the key factor which defines pretty much everything. You are very quickly running out of ammunition, of weapons, and we see that the whole Western bloc, like 50 countries, are still struggling to adequately supply Ukraine with artillery ammunition and many other things. And situation would be getting worse because Ukraine has run out of stockpiles of some types of weaponry, which were absolutely huge. For example, like you could see videos from Kyiv last night when they probably had to fire several dozens of very expensive surface-to-air missiles in one night to trying to defend against a Russian missile attack. So it's not a victory for the United States, and there is no prospect of victory for the United States in this war. However, especially taking into account 2024 presidential elections, the current administration cannot afford to lose.
Now, Mr. Kushin, we only have a few minutes left, and I do want to ask about a possibility of however slight of finalizing this conflict, since everybody has miscalculated, and I think it's pretty much apparent to anyone that they cannot have it all. The Ukrainians, in their public statements, often have this chagrin and hidden grievance against the West that they are not being supplied as they have been promised. And I think even the Zelensky leadership now understands that they are essentially being thrown to the dogs. The United States, as you said, wants to disentangle. The Europeans are not ready to jump in, and they don't have necessary finances to either support Ukraine or help it rebuild. China, on the other hand, may offer something enticing to the Ukrainians. Do you see any chance of the sides, all sides, coming to a conclusion that, you know, we need to cut the losses now and try to look for other ways of solving it?
So I believe that there might be chance for Russia and the United States to start talking after the escalation of hostilities in Ukraine, which started in May and will probably go on for several months. Maybe by the end of the year, both sides just understand that there's really no prospect to dramatically improve one's situation in Ukraine. Of course, it should be understood that for Russia's stakes in the Ukrainian conflict are much higher. Mm. And if something goes wrong, Russia will just additionally mobilize. There are some minimal goals for Russia in Ukraine, which Russia will achieve anyway, no matter what. For the Americans, the situation is different. They cannot, of course, afford some kind of massive loss of face. They need to keep the current Ukrainian regime in some form. But still, they also might be interested at some point in ending it. That might happen probably by the end of this year. But again, we shouldn't hope too much. It's quite, we cannot exclude an absolutely awful scenario under which this war will continue for 3-4 more years and number of casualties would be unparalleled since World War II, and that is also a possibility.
And very quickly, you described Russia's goal, strategic goal, as the removal of Ukraine as a source of threats for Russia's external security mm-hmm. and internal political stability. Mm-hmm. Is this goal compatible with Ukraine's existence as a sovereign state? And if so, what is the absolute minimum that Russia and Ukraine and Ukraine backers have to agree upon?
I believe the threat of Ukraine to the Russian internal stability has been removed anyway, because after the war of this scale, the huge amount of human-to-human ties which connected the two countries are already severed, and there are plenty examples of that. Huge number of cases when even close relatives living in Russia and Ukraine stop talking to each other. And it's clear that the two countries will go separate ways. Of course, Russia, for Russia, there is an issue of liberating Donbas and the rest, the parts of Zaporozhye and Kherson regions, which are not still controlled by Russia, because that's territorial integrity issue. Removal of the Ukrainian regime, I don't believe it's realistic. And we should also understand that even if Ukraine will take some obligations to be, for example, neutral, you know, the Ukrainian human losses, of course, it's not, they're completely different from what is being sometimes officially said in the West. And there might be absolutely shocking, there are reasons to believe that. And even some Ukrainian officials are hinting at that. They might be bigger than anyone expects. And after that, I don't believe any government which would be friendly to Russia would be realistically possible in Ukraine for a very long time. So some things, they have already happened. We have no way to change it.
Well, on this very sobering note, Mr. Kashin, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.